Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow it just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Solution Today. I'm your host, Bill D'Angelo, and it is now September. And I have, because of some of the emergencies, some of my programs have been a little bit about current events. So on this particular one, I wanted to re-engage the listening audience and discuss, especially since we're going to be expanding into areas on certain radio stations to carry this link. I'm already in talks with a couple of stations. And I want to go over by explaining my story as a TBI survivor from 2003, and focus it on two things for the audience, because some of you may be in different stages of brain injury, and that could be from stroke, acquired, or TBI, and other forms. We have a recovery period, and in that recovery can be at first acceptance, and then work on issues related to what you lost and what how you can recalibrate yourself. And then the second part of that is then the reset that you go through in your life, where you've come to terms with your injury, and then you have to figure out how you're going to be productive, what you want out of life, and either involved in the brain injury world or separate, because you're going to have to take life on its own terms. And I'll discuss in both those cases about ideas for living, what I have done, what I've known some other people have done, and the same thing with recovery, what I have done to recover and some of the things I did and it come to terms with it, accept it, et cetera, and took years personally and takes years for most people, and also what other people have done. Now, this is transposed onto the fact that most people that have TBI often have very divergent issues. Sometimes they're similar, sometimes they're not. It's also very individual in terms of the kind of system, the area where you're injured. It can be very intense when you have a severe injury and not so very intense, not so intense when you have a severe injury, and then very intense when you have a minor injury. People react differently, and people have different speeds, and they also have different personalities. And their personalities often will play a part in how they're going to address it, how they're going to recover. And then there's when you hit that reset, some people do not choose to try different things or stuff. They do their old stuff if they can. Most people can't. And so I'll begin when you wake up with that injury, as I did back in 2003. I went through, at first, I was not aware of what was happening to me. I really thought I was not completely conscious, personally, and I've known other people that were similar. And that is, I really thought I was sort of in a fog. I thought my doctors were telling me one thing, and I just thought I was going through the motions. He told me I wasn't going to work, but I didn't believe it. And despite profound evidence of such, And I thought I was just going to lay around the pool for about 6 months and then go back to work. But what I found, particularly in my case, and it was kind of deceiving in my case, because I never lost my higher intellectual ability. I never lost my intelligence. But what I did lose, and it affects other people in different ways. I have a friend of mine that he's an Energizer bunny. It affected him, and he keeps moving like a little Energizer bunny. His governor is set on an on position. And then he burns out, but he has a lot of, what is it, his motors running. Me, in my case, whenever I did any real thinking, and in truth, it was so bad, when I first was injured, I would get up, and I would eat, and I was aware of how out of it I was. I would suffer when my brain, people thought I exhibited like aggressive rage. In truth, it was sort of like a frustration. I would fly off the handle because my brain kind of cramped up. It didn't process information well. I remember once when my aunt took me to get I bought a car, and she took me to get the title or something, and there was something missing, like a signature. Well, the lady told me that, and I went ballistic. It was the most insignificant thing I can. All I had to do was contact the people, drive there, and they would sign the document in the right spot. But it's because just the unwarranted frustration. But that was indication of many little different areas. And whizzing out, someone on the phone, the telephone company tells you, oh, no, we're going to raise that price. And you're going off the wall. And it's more because your brain is over-circuiting, or the circuits are misfiring because of the damage done. And that's where it often comes from. I don't really deal with that anymore. But it took me a long time to understand that. I also, in my first awareness, discovered that I wasn't aware of how long I could work. But then there was slowly creeping evidence that countered that I didn't understand. I would literally, if I read an email, it would make me just a typical paragraph email, say. I would get so tired after reading it that I would have to lay down and go to sleep. For instance, doing this radio program, I could not possibly have done it. I used to go to family gatherings of say 6 hours, nothing but positive energy, love, cheer, good times, good food. And it would take me an entire weekend or 3 or 4 days to recover from the input, from just the input, not negative, just the input of engaging with, say, 5-10 people. And that went on. I would get tired at conversations, even though I like it and I'm a social person. Any task would require an appointment across town to a doctor was a major planned event for me. At the same time, I had balance issues. I played tennis, and I would go out on the tennis court, and it would feel like a rubber. In all cars, I used to see I had spatial problems. Like on the tennis court, I thought people were far closer to me than they really were. I saw two tennis balls, and when I got in a car, I thought the cars ahead of me, it could be 5 car lengths ahead, and I would look, and it seemed the car was just like right in front of me, and I used to get scared, and like stop on the brakes and stuff. So those were the things, but the major thing was the fear. And so I sought out professional help. I talked to my neurologist. He told me I started to express these things. Like I also have paranoid rages, where when I got fatigued, I would think that various unrational things were out to get me. the brain was, the executive functioning was messing up so bad that I would think the people that were doing the, around my apartment complex, in a kind of middle class, somewhere moderately middle class apartment complex with tennis court and swimming pool, and they'd have a big landscaping crew. I thought they were spying on me. And to why, I don't know. But I also thought other things were working against me. And this went on for a few years. And finally, I decided to seek professional help, other than my neurologist, who can't really deal with it. He only sees you maybe once every 3 months, and he's not, he's going to prescribe you some medication. He helped me. He's the one that told me I needed to not work. I couldn't. I didn't believe him. I thought I'd rest up and just be fine after, 6 months. But that was not the case. And that fatigue was so profound. And when I say fatigue, I mean, if I was in that time frame now and I just had, was doing this presentation, I would already be laying down in bed and I would collapse. I couldn't continue. I would just get uncontrollably rest, like almost fall asleep, and I just had to pass out. And when I finally saw a neuropsychologist, which I would recommend all of you do, especially they're good in the initial stages because they identify physiological and mental issues that are pretty much given when you're first injured, and they help you come to terms with it. And it took years of therapy because I walk in there, I'm a little raging. I told her the truth of some of these instances where I'm flying off the handle for no rational reason, really, about insignificant things. And she explained it was more a brain frustration. It's sort of like a child that, when it doesn't get his way, cries. And because they don't know any other way to express themselves, so they just cry, right? And just go into all sorts of tears. And what do you find out? Well, it's something as sad as the color on their cart that they're sitting is wrong, right? Or something like that. And it can be, it's so insignificant, it can be solved so easy. But that's the kind of thing. And when I went to the therapist, I started to, of course, tell her all my symptoms. And then I went to support groups as well. I did two things. Went to support groups and then went to find people. Those are the two things that's best when you're first injured. Support groups and then a neuropsychologist. Maybe a psychiatrist too. Usually they'll hook you up when to handle your medications if they think you need one. And in my case, I had to take some because of some of the symptoms I was suffering from. And anyway, so you've learned from some of the people, it starts to creep in because other people are telling you similar stories of their suffering, the fatigue, the frying out where they lose their grip on things and look like they're a foaming madman, or and falling asleep, not remembering things, not being able to absorb. I could read a book, and I have very good reading skills. Well, I could read a book, and I wouldn't remember the page I read, and stuff like that. That gives you another, I mean, literally, it was like I never read it, and I did. And then when you're with the neuros, that's the support groups, if it's a good one and has a cross-section of people who are injured at various stages. You find that they tell you their stories, which gives you, starts to creep in. You don't fully accept it yet, but at least the concept is in your head, and you're starting to see some of that in you. Even though it's, like I said, it's very easy to accept a physical thing. Like if you break your leg, you accept your leg's broken. You put it in the cast to do it. With this, it has to do with how you're functioning mentally. And we're not always aware of how we're functioning emotionally and the reasons for it. You know, we think it might just be I'm tired or I just had an accident, maybe I need rest. So maybe it doesn't mean anything. Not correlating that the reason you're fatigued is because your brain has been injured and it's just not processing at the same energy level. And when you do collapse, it's uncontrollable. Ironically, for me, the best person was just a few years ago, because I was injured in 2003, in which I talked to a guy that I'm going to, and I may see him soon because I have a little trouble with my ankle playing tennis. And I saw him about 3 years ago. He did a surgery to repair a tendon that I severed on the tennis court. But needless to say, a very good doctor, his name is Dr. Kostakis, and in talking to him when I explained my issues with the fatigue, he explained it where he understood it, because he told me, oh, really, that's you. I say, but I can, at one time it was an email, or if I work one day, I couldn't work the next. And he told me that he does his surgeries on Friday. Because when he does 8 hours of surgery on people, the next day he is so malfunctioning because of the mental energy, he can't even program his microwave. He has that trouble. So he has to set up Saturday as just a shutdown day. If you're talking about a sophisticated surgeon doctor, educated and trained, who went through medical school, yet the surgery wasted him so bad that his brain is not functioning, and he has trouble with literally programming a microwave that he normally could do in seconds. And so, and if he didn't do that, he couldn't function seeing patients the next day, so he schedules it on Friday. And in my case, as the doctor told me, and I started expressing what was my happening with my processing, and I told her, and like I said, it's almost like it's not something you want to admit, but all of a sudden you're starting to tell her, if I type an email, I got to lay down afterwards. Well, either you've got some other issue, your sugar's off or something, but that's not, after a full night's sleep, a normal process. And then there are other evidences and also the spatial issues, the sight issues, where I'd see two tennis balls, and I'm someone that was playing competition tennis before this, and other people seeing it. But the funny thing about this, to share with you, even when you get these things addressed by, say, support groups of people you believe exhibiting similar things, and then you have a doctor confirming it, a neurologist who examines the thing, and a neuropsychologist who knows all the various symptoms that potentially you could suffer from, and is aware and has treated patient with these things. I still didn't believe it. It was so bad that I really didn't believe, because I didn't have my brain wasn't falling out of my head. I did not believe I had an injury. And a lot of people are in doubt about this. And I looked, and I went to my neurologist, who deals with pictures of the brain. And he said to me, Mr. D'Angelo, he's talking to me. He says, yes, sir. So finally he says, come with me. And he goes, takes my file out, and he takes me into this room, which had glass with, it was a room where you could look at X-rays, MRIs, and put them up on the wall. It was white with light behind it, and you could see. So he spreads out my entire brain in MRIs, colored versions, X-rays and stuff. And he said, Mr. D'Angelo, I'm a neurologist. I don't deal in psychological things, or behavioral things, or symptoms. I deal in pictures. I deal in X-rays. I deal in MRI pictures. There is your brain. There is blood. That's injured. There it is over there in color. All these scans and various imaging. And he said, you see, that shows it. It's not a theoretical thing. It's an organic thing. And when I looked at it, I finally started to sink in. But again, because you're dealing with it's sort of like this. When people have to take stock of themselves on anything, we always are deluding themselves. It could be changing something you do. It could be as simple as maybe you drive too fast. Maybe you eat too much. Maybe you drink too much coffee. Maybe you smoke cigarettes. Some people become alcoholics. Denial is something we all do. And we really do it on patterns of thinking or negative aspects of our personality. It's almost a human trait. Or we're really unaware of them or not fully believing them, even if we see our behavior patterns. So when you're dealing with a sudden change, it's extremely difficult for you to capture it, identify it, understand the facts, and then emotionally accept it and realize it's true, as all of us do. Some people with brain injury never get out of denial. I've met people who had severe injuries who will tell you they're not injured, and they literally have a path their head taken off, and they don't believe they're injured. And they exhibit the symptoms, but they walk around blissfully. Well, I'm fortunate because of one thing, and there are also some people that do lose IQ score. Certainly in terms of how what you do in terms of retaining information can be difficult. Some people do go to college with the TBI, and then some people can't cut it. The guy I had on the radio station a few months ago was a math whiz and all of a sudden had trouble with the courses. Well, there are other people I know who have had severe injuries who went on and got master's degrees. So it's not always affecting you in that way. Sometimes it affects long range. Sometimes it doesn't. Me personally, when I was first injured in the hospital before they came, when I woke up, I didn't know my name and or where I was. They had to tell me somehow. And, well, that's what they did. They told me, no, you're not in, because I came a few months. I had come about 6 months before from Dallas, Texas. And when I was in the hospital and I finally, when I gained consciousness, I thought I was in Dallas. I didn't even remember that I had come to Atlanta. And they assured me I was in Atlanta area, a suburb of Atlanta. So when you look at yourself, if you're in that boat, and I'm really speaking not to the experienced people with TBI, but it could be some people who experience who maybe are in denial, that you need to really write down and take stock of your symptoms. And if you just suffered from an injury, you need to listen to this program, find a support group, and find the doctors so that you can at least take stock of what you're suffering from. Because you can never correct it like anything, like a personality trait, like overeating, drinking, whatever it is you do. And the only way you can start to change mental processes or change thinking processes or bad thinking processes is you have to acknowledge them first. Well, it's the same thing with the brain injury. Before you can address what you have, you first have to admit it. This takes a long time, to the point where, in my case, they told me I could not work. And the evidence was there, because how could I work a job if I fall asleep after an email, or every day I'm passing out at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, or taking cat naps? If I got up, ate breakfast, and all of a sudden did something active, like open up an email, I would pass out. Or if I did that. So certainly the evidence was there. You would have trouble on any job, because you have to be, if you got whatever job it is, if you're going in there for 3 or 4 hours, you got to perform. Forget about 8 hours. But I did not believe it. I somehow thought, oh, well, maybe that's I don't know how you do that, but it's like people who will be in denial about drinking or whatever it is. They can lie to themselves and convince themselves that it's not there when they know it somehow, it's rationally that it is. So my neurologist, my neuropsychologist, the whole support groups all told me, don't get a job. Yeah. And I was thinking, well, I'm going to. And so about 3 years after my injury, I, being a salesman and gifted with the gift of gab, excuse me, I'll get something to drink. My throat's getting a little dry. I went back and I looked at, what is it? I looked at the ads in the paper, and I found the job that was seemed to me, since I had done, I ran small companies back in Dallas at various times, and worked, you know, 50 hours a week selling doing customer service, and I started running companies where I would design the sales staff and all this stuff. And I'd work 50 hours a week without even thinking about it. So I went and I looked at a job, and it was inbound calls selling auto warranties, and it was only 6 hours a day, 30 hours a week, and the money was good. I'd make a nice salary and an override, and I thought I could really make, you know, like anywhere from with the salary, which was about $400 or $500 a week, whatever it was, about that, $450 a week, which is about $20,000, $22,000 a year, and then commission on top of that, I could easily close a lot of these warranties, and I think you got a certain percentage. I thought I could make, you know, I think I could knock down over $50K on this job, you know, $50K or $60K. And it would only be 30 hours a week, which is kind of like from 10 to 3 or whatever it was, 8 to 3 or whatever it was. It was like 9 to 3, whatever. Anyway, so I went for the interview, got dressed in my best suit, and, of course, with my sales skill and background, and I tell them my injury, and he happened to know somebody in the hospital who worked at the hospital where I was taken to, where my support group was down in North Fulton. And I did that, and he hired me now on the spot. And I just decided to go against every doctor, three different doctors, a psychiatrist, a neuropsychologist, and then some people in the support were supporting me, thought, oh, great, you know, because they want to get well story. But all my doctors told me, don't do it. You cannot handle it. Finally, the neuropsychologist who was treating me says, well, we'll just see how it goes. Well, Monday morning came around, and I got in my brightest and nicest suit, looked sharp, had a nice little cup of coffee, breakfast, got up early, was really ready to go, drove in, was on time, got in there, and we're going to have a training class and then make some calls in the afternoon, just to get your feet wet. But really, it was training classes for about 4 or 5 hours and then some phone work. And all the other people were scared of the phone. And I go through the training class, and then they were just going to give us a script because when we did some of the calls or took some of these calls, just because they realized we didn't have expertise in all these water, you know, all the product lines. And they go train us, and I thought, great. I was attentive. I had taken some serious college courses back in the 90s when I took pre-med courses, all sorts of science courses. I was a good student. I passed coursework. So this didn't seem particularly difficult to me. And I recorded the lessons and took good notes and copied everything down and literally taped the sessions so I would be up on it, which I used to do in some of my classes when I was going back to school in the 90s or late 80s. Anyway, so I went in and I was all enthused. We didn't learn anything the first day because it was just an introduction and the product lines. It was about 5 hours. And then we got on the phone. And I actually sold a couple of these accounts. I did very well because I tend to be very easy. I just read the script. I'm used to doing that. I designed them. And I tend to speak well, and I know how to close people. And I actually was the only one. They thought I was the best there. Probably was, skill-wise. Well, when I went home, I started to feel very exhausted from this 6-hour day. And I realized I didn't know anything that I had just trained. I had forgotten it. But I did not give up. I says, okay, you just one day, you just go back. And I went back on Tuesday, and I went into the class. And I went on the training. I did okay on the call. And then what happened is, and I did well on the phone again. I sold. Everyone had tremendous difficulty with the actual sales because they might not have been experienced as me. Me, I could do it in my sleep. And but again, I was wiped out when I left. But again, I took it as, oh well, I kept telling myself the rationales. And remember, we're in school learning all these different things, writing on the blackboard. I had tapes. Well, when I went home, we were going to do a prep of what we learned the day before. And, you know, we're going to, you know, say what we know. And I was okay. I don't remember it all now, but maybe in the morning I will. Maybe I'm just burnt out. And because I hadn't worked in years, I think this is just getting used to it. So I go and get up in the morning. First of all, I knew something was wrong in the morning because I had a full 8 hours, and I was exhausted and just unattuned. I had trouble making my coffee. I had trouble remembering where I was. I forgot where the place was. That's what I meant. And all of a sudden, what I did was I called my therapist, and she says, you can't do this. I says, I don't remember. So I said, well, maybe I'll all come to me when I go in the office. They're going to want me to address it. And once I ask questions, it'll trigger. Well, I go in there, and I literally looked at the person, and and they said, we're going to test you all on, you know, the various products and just 101. Well, truth of the matter is I did not remember anything. I couldn't tell them anything. I said, and I told them, I says, I am not aware of anything. And they looked at me just to guess. And they said, what about, and they started asking a question. It's like I never was in the classroom. And I had very good retention in the classes I used to take. I couldn't remember a thing. It's like the basic. I even forgot the name of the product line, you know, basic. And I sit, and they just, well, and then, of course, the guy liked me. And because I had sold, they said, well, look, maybe you just need to refresh her. We'll wait until another day and let you take the notes, and we'll go over some of the stuff by asking the questions, and we'll give you a pass. And everyone in the class liked me, so yeah, Bill, don't worry. And they kind of knew my story. I told them I'd suffered from a DBI. Anyway, so I did, but I was still oblivious. I was so exhausted. I did get on the phone again, but this time, even with all my sales background, the guy calls in to ask a question, and I go blank. I have no idea what to say. I looked at the script, but I was so punch drunk and slow, I couldn't get the words out. I had to disconnect the call. And then I looked at him, and it was Wednesday night. And on the way home, I called the therapist because I was breaking down mentally from fatigue. And I literally am having trouble driving. And I called her, and she called me right away and said, you got to quit. And I felt so bad and this and that. And remember, because I was on Social Security, there was like a ticket to work program, and I was doing this. So they were aware of it because you have to report it. You can't not do it. They love it when you're starting to look and try to work. And but all of a sudden, she tells me not to go in. So I think about it, and I go into the office, and apparently some of the people there, my therapists were contacting some of these people at Social Security. So I finally tell this guy, I go in, I tell him I'm going to have to leave this job. I can't do this. Well, I didn't tell him that. I went in there and I was going to rough it. No, excuse me. I get in there and I'm out of it. I tell him I'm a little out of this. This is, I may. He says, you know what, Bill, don't worry. We can always take a little more time with you. We're not worried about a few weeks' salary. You know, you look like you're good, you know, and I'm fumbling around, and I'm telling him, and I still can't remember what I'm doing there in terms of this. And it's not a difficult. I used to be able to take a product book and literally design a sales script and stuff off of just product books and memorize it, or take pre-med courses and do with the math, do the pre-med, all the anatomy and physiology, all the chemistry, and literally study textbooks and pass tests. This is far more difficult than just auto warranties. You know, it's different kinds of them and different kinds of cars. It was easy. Anyway, so I go into it, and I talk to this person, and then all of a sudden he tells me there's somebody on the phone from Social Security. And all of a sudden, I go in the conference room, this conference room, and I put him on speaker. And the manager leaves the gives me the privacy. And this guy from Social Security says, good morning, Mr. D'Angelo. From Social Security. And he says to me, apparently I've spoken to a couple of your doctors. And he says, I hear that you're struggling here. And I says, oh, well, and then he says, Mr. D'Angelo, I usually try to get people to take work and go. In your case, I'm going to tell you to go home. Because apparently the evidence of me the night before telling my therapist I was mentally breaking down, I can't function, and I can't start my car. And he says, leave, Mr. D'Angelo, just forget it. And they'll understand. You just go home. I've talked to your neurologist and your neuropsychologist. You don't need to be there. And so finally I told this guy that I would go home, leave, and it was a Thursday, and I just went home. I couldn't handle it. But that is the only time I was made aware, and I was so stubborn. And because I just, it was almost like a test. And the breakdown was so severe, literally by that week, I literally, as soon as I left on that, I guess it was a Wednesday, I'd been there 3 days, I collapsed for days. I was so exhausted from that. And I still can't remember what the warranty's about. I'm not trying to remember. I can't remember the company. I can't remember anything. But that gives you an idea, and that was 3 years into my post. But it was a critical point. That was about 2006 that this happened. But the reason why it's key is because from that point, I finally accepted it. And this is why it is so important. I had to take a trip. I'm not used to talking for for almost an hour straight. But the reason why it's important, and for those of you that are suffering from this and not cognizant, or paying attention to your doctors, you need to do things to prove to yourself the realities. Not because it admits you're going to be non-functioning, but in order to function better, you have to be aware of those things so you can figure out things to do and ways to adapt so that you can function. If you're unaware of it, you're going to keep crashing and burning, which I did for years, meaning I would do activity and just collapse for days with no pacing, no amount of taking care of yourself so that you can manage to use the functioning hours. My therapist at that time thought I would have about 10. I argued, I'd say I have 20. She said, so we agreed on 15. She said I had 10 fully high-functioning hours a week. I argued 20, you know, 10 to 20, so we agreed on about 15. But needless to say, that's pretty much around even today. There's days I still have to rest after activities. And the another thing is that I used to feel very guilty about resting so quickly about things. You know, like, what am I doing? You know, how lazy? What are you sitting around sleeping all day? That's what I do sometimes. Some days I literally am taking naps all day long. And because I've had activity the day before, I used to feel horrible. I was like, you should be up like you always were, you know, 24/7. You know, you're up for your full 8 hours. But that's not the case. So there's also that. But the reason why we transfer because once you learn to accept the issues, like I did in that year, 3 years after post. Like I said, some people never accept it. But once you do, then you can address all the symptoms you're suffering from, like, I don't have rage like that anymore. You learn how to adjust to that. You identify that. The fatigue you identify. So you balance out your activities in a paced way so that you're not overwrought. Also, over time, it improves a little a bit. Like I said, I'm doing a program here. I would have burnt out if I was focusing like this and explaining my story way before this. I couldn't handle that in the beginning. So it did improve a little. It wasn't as pronounced as it was in the beginning, but it's still there. I can still drive myself and force myself into a clock's mode. And so the best thing is once you take those two steps, see the support group so you see fellow survivors, see a neuropsychologist so that you can address all your problems, and then do things in order so you become aware. Now, once you're aware, then you can address all the symptoms that you're suffering from and develop coping strategies and a governor, which has been by the brain injury. Your governor, like a governor in a car, it's like your transmission's been whacked out. Well, you can rebuild that transmission with coping strategies so that you can learn to adapt to that to maximize your functioning hours and in making sure that you balance your health, take care of your diet, exercise, and then maybe find things to do that help you exercise and stuff gain more functioning. Now, there are things you will probably learn that I have to accept. I can't work or run a company for 40 hours a week. It's never going to happen. But that doesn't mean I can't have valid productiveness in other ways. So in my case, and I find the people that recover from brain injury the most, who are the most confident and fulfilled and happy, are those that establish activities, hobbies, and creative things post-injury. They might use some of their work experience. Certainly I've used my sales experience and management experience to do things in my life post. If I don't directly do those jobs anymore, I certainly use my skills in those areas and certainly my people skills. But you have to find it in the context of your new life. Now, for me, because I was economically strapped during the time of that period, that's one of the reasons why I tried to do that job, I had to find extra money. I did have some Social Security, but I had such a limited amount that I had to find work. I at first found jobs where I would do these mock trials and stuff. There's a place up in the area where I lived at that time, that right down the road, they used to do mock trial, taste food. So I would earn a couple of $100 a month just taste testing food and various different products. You know, they give you $50 for your opinion and stuff like that. Or you go in a mock trial for an hour and they pay you $90. I'd earn about $100 to $200 a month, depending upon the month, just doing that. And then I looked for something, and I was looking for something else. And we talked to my therapist, and she told me I could only really work one day a week. That and that is permitted on Social Security. So what I did is I found a job as a caregiver for a caregiver for a man who was probably elderly, like in his 80s, had a stroke. Now, I don't have skills in this way, but I talked to the woman, and the reason why she hired me is I was more of a companion. I did some feed him, occasionally I had to clean him, but I didn't have kids. I'm not the diaper type. I'm not the type that would be good at working in as an orderly in a hospital or something. Just not my thing. You know, I'm more the salesman. You know, that's not the kind of thing that I enjoy or are very good at. But because I had a sales background and that kind of stuff, she thought I would be better than the typical women they had taking care of them, who are much more skilled in that area. So I would go there every Sunday and tape my football games because I'm a football fan. And she paid me like, you know, I'd earn $110 every time I went there. You know, she paid me like $15 an hour, whatever it was. I was earning good cash. And so that would supplement my income because between that and the other thing, I was making it. Also, through the support groups, I also started to do some things proactively because this is an important thing. I also did some volunteer work in terms of peer visits to fellow survivors. And as a matter of fact, this program is sort of an extension of that. I even started at one time a teleconference support group that didn't fly because you can't have too many people on the phone. It's very difficult to work that out. Now Zoom is sort of taking over, so it's a moot point. But I attempted that. And then I helped with establishing a TBI because my injury was in 2003. It's right around the beginning of the Iraq War and the war in Afghanistan. Well, all the guys at the VA in Atlanta, where I'm based, were having difficulty because they were coming back from all the bombs under the vehicles. Not that they would blow up, but the percussion from the bombs were causing bad brain injury. So they wanted us to be part of the group since we were not veterans, but some of us were. But they needed people who were experienced at TBI. Like I told you, that you need to go into a group to get experience. Well, these veterans, these young kids, were coming back, and I did a lot of peer visits with them. Some of them would come from some of our relatives throughout the Georgia Mountains where they would find people they knew who had it, and I would talk to these people, and they'd say, can you talk to this guy, JD? He's had a brain injury, and this one, and this one. And they would introduce me to people, and I'd bring them into the peer visitor program, and I'd do the visit. It's almost like a fellowship. And I started that because you can't just do it. And it was a way to give back. It's healthy to, when you become experienced at this, to share. Anyway, so those were my activities initially. Well, eventually the guy died. And by the way, I did so well with him, he wanted me there when he died. And he gave me tons of money when he died, like thousands and thousands of dollars. Just cash, just gave me loads of money. But he requested me to be there when he was at his deathbed. I established enough because I gave him one thing that a lot of the caregivers didn't do. I gave him his dignity. Then I also want to note that as part of my recovery, as I was suffering from a lot of these major paranoiac issues, during the course of time. And these paranoid issues were so bad where I would have like nightmares in my head. I would literally go to sleep and still be in the nightmare when I was sleeping. And when I woke up, I would remember it. And the only way I got out of it, I talked to my cousins, I talked to my mother, I talked to my aunt, trying to snap me out of it as I was flipping out. Medications weren't doing. The only thing that really solved it for me, I remember what I did. I was in my apartment, And I was suffering from this. I couldn't sleep. I would go in and I'd have these terrifying nightmares. And then I'd get up and I was in this sense of paranoia, you know, literally looking out the window. What is this? And again, it's the effect of the brain injury. It's one of the symptoms people suffer from. That you lose your sense of what's real and right, and because of the hit on the head, and you think things, your perceptions are so whacked out. And so I talked to my therapist, but the one thing that did it for me, and it's something I do to this day, I discovered this, and I told this to my doctors and everything. What I did is I'd lay down on a couch, or sometimes a bed, and I would just, essentially, I would be in prayer. And I would pray to God for whatever period of time. And I did it when I was in one of these these paranoid rage, which is, I don't know what, and where I'm still in the same nightmare when I go to sleep, and then I remember it never ended. And what I did is I just went to bed and prayed, and I passed out. And then it disappeared. I woke up, and it was like it never existed. I was normal, happy. So ever since then, whenever I suffer any kind of symptoms, particularly if I'm fatigued, when I'm fatigued, I'll get a little like that even now. And so I just developed the habit. Whenever I feel like that, I lie down. I don't always sleep. And I commune with God. And usually once I do that, if I either pass out or not, it passes. And that's it. And I ask him to take it off me. That's what I specifically, my prayer was, can you deal with this? I can't deal with this. You know, I've done everything. I've taken all the medications. I've talked to the therapist. I talked to family. I talked to friends. Yeah, I'm still, I know this is not rational thought, and it was always disappeared. Now, I don't even really suffer from those things anymore, and I think it's because of all those prayers, but that's the conscious effort that you have to make in terms of that. And then once you reach this reset point, this is where you start the next step of your journey, post-brain injury, and that is, you have to, with the reset, now that you've addressed your issues, what are you going to do with it? Well, you still have to live a life. And your old life and old self is gone. You have to recalibrate what you can do that has value. And the only way you gain confidence, you can, because everything you had that gave you confidence before, work and everything else, the way you thought, everything, it's kind of gone. You're a different person now with a different set of criteria, a different functioning, a different thinking patterns. And what you could do then, you can't do anymore. Now, you might remember some elements of it, so you have to find value. So what I did is I took the job. I figured out once I took the cue from my doctor that I was going to work one day a week, I realized something. I realized I could be very effective like I was with the man. And I then started teaching tennis. And I could do tennis because I'm a skilled tennis player. I can teach people how to play. I could do it sporadically, meaning I could teach maybe 10 hours a month and then at $40 an hour, whatever I was charging. That's enough to make up for what I lost when the guy died, so I could just teach, you know, three or four. And I did. I taught. I'd rehab people. I taught others tennis. I'd have clients of about, you know, 10 clients or something like that, you know. And I'd teach them, or five or six, whatever it was. And I'd get about 10 hours a month, and that's how I supplemented. And then I realized what I had to do in my functioning, and it turned out to be very profitable for me, that I had to do things intermittently, that I can't think about working like other people, full out 8-hour days, nor can I think about any kind of real job where I have to consistently be up. You know, I couldn't do, you know, because I could maybe one day I'd be good for 2 or 3 hours, but maybe the next I wouldn't be able to handle that. I could only work 15. And you have to start to gain confidence in what you could do post-injury as opposed to, remember, you don't have anything to pass. Well, taking care of the old man gave me confidence because I accomplished it and I earned a living and it made me feel very good. Then when I taught, when I developed, helped the support group, remember, you not only, when you give to other people, that builds your confidence as well as help them, but it also builds your confidence that you have value, that you went and you managed to help these poor soldiers by sharing your experience as a TBI survivor. Then I had to look for other things to do. I did the tennis, and I figured out that I could do things sporadically. I just couldn't do things consistently. I couldn't punch a clock, but I could do it 2 hours here, 15 minutes here. Maybe one day it'd be good for 2 or 3 hours. Next day I'd take off and rest. So if I could find things to do, like tennis, which is sporadic, I could set them one day on Thursday, one day here, and do things. Our support group once in a while. Now, I sort of added into that by taking on this radio program once a month, second Thursday, because I could do it then. Now, if I had to do this every night, I couldn't do it. Or if I did it every week, it would be way too much. Other people can do this. The station manager, she does it one day a week. I couldn't do it. I'd be overwhelmed too much. But when I so sporadically do things, and so this led me personally, other people I've known, I have a friend Mark that started a wonderful support group. It's called the Seminole Spirit, in which he essentially tries to help people get on their feet through speech language. There's another woman that started a whole peer visitor program that services various different states. There are other people that have done other things that are volunteer work in terms of giving their time. Remember, you don't have to collect a paycheck to do it. But this also led me to some really great profit. Because I had so many sales skills and I made so much money for the people I worked for, I made money too, but I really made money for my bosses who put up the money for these companies, millions. I designed systems for a golf development company in which we gave away golf clubs, in which they were selling property left and right. They were making multi-million dollars off the systems and the structures I set up for them. And training the sales staff and the telemarketing staff and the customer service staff, all of that. So I can't do that no more. But what I can do is use the skills. So I was faced after the guy died, and I was teaching tennis, and my mother passed away. And I was going to get something after it took years, actually, to get something out of her estate would settle. I think it settled about 3 years after she died. That's New York. Anyway, because we had to have it done by a public administrator. But when I knew I was going to get this money, which would have been a certain amount if I got the public administrator, I started then to use my skill to expand my lot in terms of my economics, because I realized the economy was bad at that time. Things weren't looking good. It was 2008 during the crash, the great crisis, whatever they call it, and 2010. It was a couple of years later. And I knew I had to. So what I did was, since things were so depressed, I spent on first part of the project, I spent about 6 months or so, maybe a year, almost that much, probably about 9 months, and I found the townhome, and I forced the bank to give me a loan. I had very little income, and I dealt with Bank of America, and because that would put me in an advantageous position, I would actually lower my expenses because I would do better with a house payment than a rental payment. And it would be bare well for the future. Sure enough, it's gone up. Probably I'll make about $200,000 on my townhome. That's the first thing I did. And it was because I could do that incrementally. Remember, if you don't have all the functioning hours, you have to, I at least, had to find things I could do at spits and spats, meaning do it here, so I could do all the research on the land, all the research on the properties, all the research on the financing and work it, and I didn't have to do it every day, and I could leave it aside if I had to, right? So eventually I closed my house, and then I had started to think about then I had to work my mother's estate, and that was I had to bring back my sales skills in order to do it. What did I do? I had to convince the public administrator to not sell the place at auction, but sell it through a real estate agent. So I found the real estate agent, got her to give an estimate of the property, and I sent it to the public administrator and the lawyer representing the estate or handles it for the public administrator. Well, he didn't want to do it because they make a little money when they sell it at auction. They don't care if they sell it for $120,000. Well, now that I got this where the real estate agents say it was worth in the mid-fours, I think that's what they said, I think we got $425 for it. Well, what's the difference? The difference is me and my sister. The difference was between getting, say, $50,000 and maybe $150,000 or close to it, $200,000. That's a big difference. So I convinced them. Well, this attorney didn't want to do it because this is their little fiefdom. I have no authority. This public administrator, when you put it in him, he's the boss. That's it. And it's a bureaucracy. He can do whatever he wants. He doesn't have to listen to me. And this attorney was letting me know that. So you know what I told the attorney? I brought back my sales skills like I did with the banks, and I told them, look, you may not want to do this, but I already know it's worth more. If you sell that property at auction for less than what I can get for this, you may be able to do that to me. But I told them this. You give me a cup of coffee, a computer, and a telephone book, and I'll have your name over every channel station in New York. You will be able to walk out of your office. And he tells me, I don't like threats. And you know what I told them? It ain't a threat. Well, they managed to list him with the attorney. He convinced them to do it, and that was the end of it. We got more for the money. People don't know that, but that's what I did. Why did I do that? Because I knew I would have a better, bitter nest egg. The next plan came, what would you do with that? And so since I can't work, I thought, what am I going to do? I inherit this money. And at the end of the day, when it was all settled, after I refinanced my townhome, got out of the FHA, I got through Bank of America a year before, and I got into the credit union where I didn't have to pay mortgage insurance. I lowered my house. I put up about $13,000. I paid a few debts, and in the end, I had about $130,000 left after I did that, but I was in a good position. And then I was looking at it. Well, I can't work. I have limited income. What am I going to do? And so then I thought, well, I'm going to have to try to grow this money. I can't work, but what I can do is I can grow this money. And I looked at things to do, and I had looked at real estate. I was thinking of getting a rental property. And I looked and looked for rental properties, and I could never find a deal that I think I can swing. And finally, I found this place after about 6 months. It was in late part of 2013. I already had refinanced my townhome, dropped my house payment to the low 30s. I put up used some of the money I had, about $13,000, to pay it down so I could get a conventional loan. And I looked at it, and I decided, well, let me see, what am I going to do? I'll invest in real estate. I can put the money in there, and and then I'll resell it or rent it. And I thought about it a second. I said I could get stuck with this property, and I'm not geared to rehabilitate on a property. That requires hiring contractors. And what's the guarantee I'm going to be able to get rid of it? And so and the return wouldn't have been that good. I could spend $60,000 or $70,000, rehab it, and then what do I got? So I decided I didn't like it. So I did not buy. The real estate agent showed me a lot of places that I did not put an offer on any of them. And then I started to think, what could I invest in? And I started to look at stocks. And I knew that the electric car boom was going to take off. But I didn't know what to do. I had never invested in a stock before in my life. And I knew of Tesla. And I knew, once I started studying electric cars, this is in 2013, I knew this was going to be something that would eventually take off. And I then read my history. And I spent months on this, just like I did finding my townhome, just like I spent months working the public attorney. Remember, I looked at this as this was my job. Instead of looking at it like, dang, I designed this, I can't work full-time, I can spend my job is getting up every morning and figuring out how to expand my portfolio, expand my amounts in my bank account, expand my wealth. That I can do. And I can do it if I buy the right real estate, buy the right cars, force the public administrator to sell, get the loan from Bank of America. I used the same skills on all of that. And these were a lot of skills that I earned when I worked in sales and ran companies. So you develop problem-solving skills. So I looked at Tesla and I looked at other companies. And I decided, because Tesla was so fluctuating at that time and it cost so much to get in, I was leery of it, nor is it guaranteed to succeed. And there are a lot of other electric companies. Well, I looked at history. This gives you an idea how you do research. And then I'm going to lead into how the audience can figure out one day how they can apply these skills for them. And I looked at some things, and then I decided, well, you know, if you look at the turn of the last century, there were a lot of car companies. We only know of Ford, General Motors, Chrysler, because they survived. But the reality is there was a whole slew of car companies at the beginning of that industrial revolution that didn't survive, who were good companies. But for whatever reason, sales product, maybe product, they didn't go. Well, that will happen to certain electric car companies. There'll be the good ones that succeed and the other ones that don't. Then I looked at what was the source. Since I knew electric cars were going to boom, I looked at what happened with the car, internal cab gas engine, and you know what the one company that survived it and who prospered was John D. Rockefeller and Standard Oil and at the turn of the century. Why? Because he was going to supply the oil for whoever was successful and the gasoline, no matter whether they went under or not, he was going to be the one that's going to be supplying all the ones that do survive. So it would have been better to invest in oil at that instead of the car companies. So I looked at what was the ones, and I decided that lithium was it. That's what you need for batteries. There are other metals, but the other metals like cobalt and stuff like that are part of the battery chain, nickel, they can be changed. It's lithium that can't be changed. So I did the research. I found the lithium company. And I bought about $50,000 shares, about $50,000 or $60,000, in the penny ranges. But because the company was in Nevada, next to where Tesla was putting their gigafactory, which is why he moved to Nevada, to be there, the lithium source, and I decided that was the best bet. And sure enough, as we speak now, the penny stock that I invested in then is now going over 20 since the first of the year, and now is in the mid-20s now. It's fixing to be even higher. Those are the things that you can do to help yourself. And I did it because I worked a part-time, because I looked at these things as if it was my job, since I had the money and I worked on investment. But the key is, though, you have to do the work. You have to do the research. It's not luck. If you ascertain the market and you ascertain the correct choice, to me it looked like a simple solution. And so those are the kinds of things. The second thing I did as a hobby is about 5 or 6 years ago, I took up guitar. Now, remember, I mentioned tennis, and I mentioned now guitar and singing and playing, and I write songs. I apparently have a little bit of a skill or a little bit of ability, and I've been now from zero knowledge on the guitar, I can now play two or three, I write songs every two or three months, and I play them publicly all the time. I just played the weekend. I played a bunch of them with my family, short versions, but I can play, and I'm growing as a guitar player. The reason why tennis and music is good, beyond just the enjoyment of it, I happen to have adaptability, is because it's been proven that playing music functions best. It gives you the best aerobic exercise for your brain. It actually helps brain function. When you do music, if you listen to it, your brain, you can see it light up under certain kinds of magnetic resonance. Well, when you actually create music, meaning write, play, and sing, it goes 20-fold, and your functioning is actually exercised. Your brain is actually exercised. And then I didn't do these by choice, but they now are a part of using it for brain exercises for people with TBI and other things. So is tennis. I was teaching tennis. Tennis is very good at relearning hand-eye coordination post-injury. Helps people with strokes, helps people with balance, helps people with hand-eye coordination to get rid of spatial issues. It just happened to, the Lord bless me, by putting me into two things that I'm reasonably good at that actually help with the injury. Now, as I talked your ear off about me, what I want to do is I want to lead the audience to realize, now that we've spoken about this, is then, therefore, once you do the steps in terms of becoming a knowledge about the injury and recovering by, one, admitting it, getting with the proper support group to see people who are like you, and then going with the the doctors and also a neuropsychologist to explain some of the issues you have, and then you're in reset, where you adjust. You accept it, then you adjust to the symptoms. And then the final thing is you got to find your creative injuries that you can do post-injury, and they'll gain your character. I just explained what I did. And since I'm now going to be considerably wealthier with my stock investment, and because it's going to take off so greatly, not only will I do this program and expand it a little bit, but I'll probably at some point create some kind of nonprofit, because I don't have to concern myself with making money anymore. That's going to be a past part of my life very soon. Once I have the kind of money that I don't have to worry anymore and bills are paid automatically, I'll just find something that's creative in the nonprofit area. I don't know what that is. I asked some of my family for suggestions. They mentioned battered women. I'll certainly still do this program because I think I can add to it. And for the audience's sake, and I may expand it to areas that have less, that are underserved, that maybe can use the message. But you have to go for other areas for your own creativity. I gave you mine, but you have to get with your neuropsychologist to find the things that, because living is just as important as the recovery as anything else. You can create your own creative outlets, and you will find that you'll gain confidence and do those things. You have to find whatever that is, whatever volunteer work you do. Doesn't have to be related to brain injury. Certainly doesn't have to be what I do. But you have to search for those things. And you have to do it in the context of your new reality with your new brain injury, like I did. Because I could be great sporadically. I can write songs. I can sing. I just can't work where I got to put in 4 or 5 hours and stuff like that. And and those are the kinds of things. And then the final thing is my faith in God is also what brought me through this, brought me through my recovery. I was talking to a friend today, and I just can't believe, considering where at one time I was on food stamps and had no money, declared bankruptcy just 15 years ago, and now I'm on the precipice of making a fortune in which I'm wealthy. And I just, I mean, I did the work, but I always comes with a higher power. And certainly I thought of that. And certainly part of, I told you the stories of recovery. So I also think that you need to, I'm not a preacher, so I don't want to come off like that. I certainly am not Mr. Bible, but I do know that's part of it. So I would do check the higher power. And if you look at support groups like AAA, they're all based on that. Having faith and stuff can help tremendous amount of strength, not only in the symptoms of TBI, but also in the blessings that you get later. And if you do things with that, you tend to be protected. And it, for me, because I faced death a few times in my life with the TBI and also with the illness I had a few years ago, open heart surgery, once you have that faith, you can face those things without fear. Because I was nervous when I went into the hospital with my TBI, and I was nervous when I was dragged into the hospital, and they're going to cut open my chest. And the only way I got through it was because I had faith. And when I did that, I was able to do it with the confidence. No matter what happened, I didn't care. I was okay. He put me at ease, so I didn't worry anymore. That's all he did, just took away the worry. Of course, I could have not made it, but then I would have been in his hands. But it made me ability to handle it with a certain amount of confidence and stuff like that. So acknowledging that is not a bad thing. The other thing I'm going to do, and I may take a phone call because the audience is filled and I want to get this in, is as we discuss it, we're going to have to give a little 9/11 expression because it's the anniversary, and we have to give a corona update. And I have a caller in. She's my auntie, and she'd probably be mad, but I'm going to take the call, see if she wants to talk, because eventually I may spread this into her area, which is a rural area north of Georgia, and I just want to take her in on this part of the call because she may have information in that area. And it's relevant, and we're closing this program pretty soon. And then maybe we'll do a little 9/11 anniversary because that's bound to be made. Hello? 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 Hello?
Well,
I guess not. Hello?
Yes?
Auntie, welcome on the program.
Hi, Bill. You're doing a wonderful job explaining your history.
Yeah, well, I was trying to get it back to the basics of solutions today and go across the brain injury spectrum. I did okay?
Yes, you did an excellent job.
Yeah. I just told my story. I didn't think I could fill it, but apparently when I got on a roll, I kept talking, huh? But
yes, you did.
Yeah, and all I did was reiterate my entire story. That's it. You got, and then, you know what? It's kind of neat because now I have a tape of it. I don't have to do it no more.
You remembered a lot of details. Now I knew some of those details. But I didn't remember all the order and stuff. And there were some things I didn't know about.
Like what?
Well, some of the jobs that you had, I knew about the old man because you told me that a lot. But then how much you did with the auto sales, the warranty.
Auto
warranties and how they warned you, the neuropsychologist warned you and about it, that you couldn't do it, and you didn't believe it at first.
No. And you know who knows that? Who's a witness to that whole time? Was Mark, Mark showed me how to drive there. He knew I was doing it. He was supportive of me at that time. And he knew I got the job. He loved it. And because he thought, oh, great. It's a great story. But and he showed me how to drive there from my old place down the river and how to get there, because it was all the way out in Marietta. And he showed me how to transfer it there. And, yeah, that's true. I gave it. Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah. And they told me to leave. They ordered me to go home because I was breaking down.
And the social security guards calling you, I never knew about that.
Yeah, because they were explaining to him that he's not capable of it. You know, they didn't care. Bill, you don't need to, if you can't function, listen to your doctors, go home. Yeah, because they don't want you to be doing it. I, like I said, it was not, you know, I couldn't function, you know, and because they have those programs where you, ticket to work. They want you to go back to work. You know, they have a program. But he told me, I tried to get people to work, but in your case, I'm telling you to go home. That was, yeah, but because the therapist were calling them and saying, you know, he can't, this is, you know, they'll forget it, you know, because they don't want you to do something if it's not, you know, they're not that callous. But, and then, of course, while I got you on the phone, is I plan on maybe expanding in your area. I talked to the program manager, and that is to give an update on Corona. And you might as well share it because you're in the area and you're aware of what's up there. Your zone is a little hot now. Rural areas are getting hit harder this time around.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes. And it's going to get worse as September, October, November, December roll around. And there's more and more spikes. Things are going up. And that's why you should be prepared in that area. And remember, you're more vulnerable because even though the population is spread out, remember, you have less hospitals up there than we have down here.
Mm-hmm.
And just be conscious. So what I'm going to do next month, and some of the evidence is that, just some information, you know, people that get the vaccine spread it less, and get it less impact than the ones that don't. And they're now trying to push people to wear masks and be cautious, and people aren't doing it. Now people are maybe going to have to learn, some of them, the hard way. I hate to see people dying, but what I'm going to probably do next month is I'm going to have a big update. FDA has approved the medications now, and the efficacy of doing it is sensible, and getting the booster. Remember, for anyone out there, the booster is 8 months after your second shot. But you do drop off in the 3 months before that, meaning after 5 or 6 months, you drop down. So before I go, how are you doing in your area over there?
Well, the hospital is pretty full, and a lot of people are getting it. And I went to work the other day, and they brought the sixth grade class in. The woman said to me, the woman was covering for another teacher. She said, she's out with COVID, and one of the kids tested positive. You better put on your mask. So I put on my mask, and then I didn't have my helper for the little kids, because he was covering for the first grade teacher out with COVID.
All right.
So there's this right and left we're hearing about people getting it.
Right and left, meaning lots of people are getting it?
Yes, yeah. I almost think, you know, that it's going to go to herd immunity. But, you know, some people get it worse than others. You saw how Brian was, didn't you, the other day?
Oh, he was terrible, wasn't he?
He could just sit there.
He was out of it.
Yeah, he couldn't. He was so exhausted.
No, I've never seen him.
Yeah.
What?
His brain is foggy. It's hard to concentrate. And the fatigue.
The brain, it affects brain functioning. Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
You know that. How's his breathing?
Yeah, that's what a lot of people are saying.
What?
That's what a lot of people are saying.
Yeah, so he says he can't think, concentrate, or anything?
Well, he has a hard time. We'll see.
What about his breathing? Is he fatigued, really, all the time? I mean, in other words, the way we saw him is the way he is all the time. He even said he doesn't even have – he said that – I told him to take it easy, don't push it. You know what he says? He was very honest. He says, oh, no, I don't push it. I can't. In other words, he gets so – it's like what I was describing about the brain injury fatigue. It's uncontrollable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hey, and you can attest. You know when you did a lot of work and you were exhausted. You've had times where you went home, you know, like when working full time or maybe even other times. And I'm sure you were.
I told you this job one day a week for me now. I come
right
home exhausted one day a week.
I mean, wasted.
Yes.
We
5 days a week for all those years with the family and everything. One day a week, he did it.
And after that one day, are you exhausted the next day?
I'm exhausted that day. But, you know, the next days my things are more at my own pace, like you were saying. Like today I didn't go to Becky's to do homeschool till the afternoon.
Yeah, I saw Brian and I was shocked. Yeah. He laid down.
Yeah.
Did you see
right
him there? And he was not part of the, he normally is part of the engagement.
Conversation. No.
He didn't engage at all.
No.
No, he didn't even engage. You know, all the horsing around that we were doing, all of us, the girls, the guys, everyone was sort of Haley. Everyone was sort of you. Everyone was sort of rattle-tatting him. It was kind of festive to me.
Yeah.
Jeff was. Everyone was sort of animated. It was really enjoyable. I had a ball. It was one of my favorite.
Yeah, it was very, very nice.
What?
It was a nice.
Yeah,
it was
funny. Relaxing, the kids' engagement. Everyone was sort of just engaging, rattling. I loved joking with Josh. He looked like he got some peace and quiet. Becca looked thrilled. And just to be doing something different. And you looked happy. Sarah looked thrilled. The only one that, and even Faith looked thrilled. Although Faith looked worn, too.
Yes, she did look worn, but
yes,
she's not as bad off as him.
She's not as bad off as him?
No. I mean, she's been going to work every day. I mean, he does, too, but he does some of his work from home. But I can tell he's himself, for sure.
What? He's what?
He's not himself.
No, he's not, no. And Brian's a kind of energetic guy. That's always been my perception of him. He's like a lumberjack almost. That's what he reminds me of. You know, he's built like a scrap. You know, he's not in bad condition, Brian. You know, physically.
Yeah, he
he's
does
not.
Long-distance bicycle riding. You know
that.
He's
just lean. And he walks with those long legs. It's not like he always looks energetic of all the people. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's a bike rider. And it knocked him out. And, like I said, the picture of him disturbed me. Hello?
Yeah, well, the doctors told him it would be 6 months.
And this is, can you hear me?
Yeah.
This is what, for my audience, what I'm trying to relate in the corona. What we're talking about here, audience, and this is my aunt, and I took the call because she lives.
Hello? Bill? Hello? 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 Hello?
Auntie? All right, Auntie, sorry that you got disconnected, but sorry I got disconnected, folks, but I just wanted to sign off and tell you to get vaccinated and get your boosters. We'll begin the next program as soon as we can, and we'll make sure to keep you abreast, and hopefully we'll expand it. Like I said, we're closing on this. And we'll probably do this at another point, and next month maybe address some of these other things and come up with some more ideas in terms of this. Auntie? Auntie? Hello?
Yeah.
I got disconnected. I got disconnected. I pressed a button. I disconnected myself off the program.
Is that what happened?
Yes. I went downstairs and I pressed the button and I disconnected myself. I had to call back in. So we had some dead air time. I was thinking you would take over the program. But I did want to mention.
No, I couldn't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to. Can you hear me good?
Yeah.
Can you hear me good? Okay. Just wanted to remind everyone to get their shots. What I'm going to do next month, I'm probably going to have a broadcast with some of your family on and you, because I'm going to introduce it to that station out of Murphy, and we're going to speak to the local area about some of the urgency of corona. And I'm going to introduce the brain injury program to them, and then we're going to, we'll combination it, because I may use it as a link, because broadcasting this in that area will gain us a lot of people or TBI that could use the program, like I did tonight, for this kind of solutions we offer and some of the programs we put on, because they don't have the same resources. Remember that? So it'd be broadcast in all those mountains. It would be very apropos. You agree?
Yeah, I don't know how many people listen to this station that are younger, though.
Well, it's not any, I'm only going to start. You mean not many young people listen to that station?
Young people don't listen to radio anymore. They listen to, like, Spotify and Pandora.
I'll work on that next. I'll start at the radio station. And besides, when people are TBI, they have a tendency to be stuck in the house. They might not be so sophisticated.
Well, you may get some of the older ones.
Yeah. I'll just try. I also want to put it out on the air that they should be aware of corona. And so I'll do a program on it next month like I'm doing now, because it's going to get worse. So I'll introduce the Brain Injury Network and do it, maybe have some of you on that are relevant to your area. I'll talk to you about who could be on that would explain some of the indigenous to the rural areas and some of the contact points that I'm not aware of. The final thing I want to do, though, is I want to say a little prayer, because this program is essentially, Campbell's going to do it, but this program, 9/11 has an anniversary in a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
It's 20 years since 9/11. And I think it's a good idea to celebrate it. And to me, it's a sacred event. What about you?
Yeah, well, I've been hearing about it on the, you know, on the radio and other things.
By the way, did you have a ball at our get-together?
Yes, I did.
And I did want to compliment you on something. So much so that I ended up buying some more at Walmart. I couldn't get it in the, guess what? It was the best potato salad I've had in my life.
Are you kidding?
No, it was great. Because it
I'm
was
glad
light.
I like it because I don't think, well, not, I had, I'm still eating it.
It was the best I've ever tasted because it didn't have that greasy, heavy feel to it. It was light and it was easy to go down and I loved it. I had it, I made sure to knock it off and then I was still jonesing for it. I went out and bought some from, I bought some sandwiches and roast beef and I made sure to have some potatoes. So after I rode my bike, so it was very good and I enjoyed it. I think we should do it more often. And because it's really
what
not
was
much.
Nice too was being able to sit outside, I think.
Yes, and it was relaxed, no stress, you know, simple food, hamburgers and don't complicate it. And so we could just spend most of the time just having fun. It's not like we even planned anything. It was sort of just sitting around and talk. And, I mean, it was, you know, it was just nice. It was nice to engage with. Haley's turned into a little boss.
I know. She's something else, isn't she?
She's a little boss, isn't she?
Yeah.
Huh? She's
something else.
Yeah, but you know what? She had the evidence of that when she was younger, too.
Yes, she did.
Yes. But Faith looked tired, too. Drawn.
I'm sure she
word.
Is, yeah. She
huh?
just keeps pushing herself.
I keep telling her just to, you know. You know how I told her? I warned her. You know what I told her? If you push yourself like this and you don't kick it back a little, he's going to end up wanting to do that too. That's what she said. You're right. I said because in his case it's dangerous because he could be put. You know, you could go back into pneumonia if you push it too prematurely. And so he's weakened in his immune system. And that's it. I think he's going to get the vaccine now when he has what he can. I have a feeling. What do you think?
I don't know. I haven't asked him about it. I didn't want to say. I told you so.
Oh, you're avoiding that too, right? Why, you did tell him so? Huh?
Yeah.
Because
I heard the other day at church they were saying somebody got it three times. And they said they must be getting all the variants. Because you think after you get it once that you won't get it again. But they got it three times. And then you're hearing of people who get it when they have the vaccine.
Well, yeah, what do you mean? What do you mean? I didn't get what you said.
I said I've heard of someone who got COVID three times.
Right. And?
Right? So that they told them, hey, you don't have to get all the variants, but the person got it three times. And then I've heard about people getting it who have had the vaccine.
Oh, yeah, you could still get it with the vaccine. Faith had the vaccine.
Right.
Right? She didn't get as sick. You know this?
No, she didn't get as sick as he did, that's for sure.
Right. I mean, the vaccine is not, the efficacy isn't 100%.
Right.
And the variants come in. And but if it muffles it, it could save your life. You see,
mm-hmm.
if it does it. And hopefully, eventually, it'll run its course. And we won't be, in a situation where we're going to, be dealing with it and stuff like that. All the time. But, like I said, it's kind of, I've just been cautious. I got my, do you have the N95 mask?
No. Mm-mm.
It's a good idea to get some. Maybe I'll send you a few. Just so you have it. You should wear it to work. The N95 protects you from getting it. Becca wears one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And and stuff like that.
Well, Bill, I'm going to let you go because...
Yeah, I do too. I'm exhausted.
I
I want to sign off my radio program. And,
you have to sign off.
Yeah, because I got disconnected the last time. But I gave a good talk. It wasn't so bad for me being the only one talking, huh?
No, you did a very good job, I was going to tell you.
Hey, I loved it. Look, be in touch, and I'll let you run,
okay.
And I'll sign off my radio program. Thanks for calling in, and thanks for sharing it. And I'll talk to you later. Have a good night.
Okay, you too. Bye, Bill.
Have a good one. Bye-bye. All right, audience. Bye. And audience is, it's very good. It's been a good program. I think we address most issues. And I want to just tell you, I'll see you next month. So please make sure you get tested. Get the vac and get the booster. Don't shuck on this. Remember, no one's dying from the vaccine. It's not 100%, but it does protect you to some extent and maybe muffle it if you should get corona, which you can still get with the vaccine at sometimes, but it will take away its potency. And then get the booster because it loses its efficiency in 6 months. But we'll get on that next week, and let's all say a prayer. 9/11 anniversary. God bless America. And God bless the USA, and God bless everyone out there. This is Bill D'Angelo signing off for Solutions Today. We'll see you next month at the end of the at the second Thursday of the month. Until then, enjoy your day and have a good one. Sign off for now. See you next month. Bye-bye.